Hello and welcome to episode number 5 of Splash Pad, a TCU on-a-side podcast focusing on the TCU women's basketball team. I'm your host, Tori Couch, and I'm joined by the voice of Killer Frogs, JD Andrus. We are recording on Friday, December 27th. The TCU women's basketball team has played 3 games before the holiday break, including the conference opener at UCF this past week, and they're now 12 and 1. And ranked number 11 in the country. How are you doing today, JD?
Good. I'm excited to talk some women's basketball. I haven't done anything Sports Illustrated related in a few weeks, so I'm excited to get back in the swing of things now the holiday season's kind of slowing down.
Yeah. Well, yeah, with football kind of having a little mini break here before the bowl game, it's kind of a quieter time, which is nice in some ways. But I'm with you. I'm ready to be chatting a little bit of women's basketball. So we're going to start looking back. They, like I mentioned, they had 3 games this past week before the holiday break. The first one was a win over La Tech, 92-41, and Madison Connor went a little nuts. We were talking before the podcast. She kind of finally hit a little bit of a stride here in a couple games, which was really nice to see. She hit 1,000 career points against Louisiana Tech. And she had scored 664 of those points up to that point at TCU.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit in the last podcast, right? About Madison Connor was kind of going to be the make it or break it, right, for this team. Not in the sense that she's the number one player, but because everyone knows you got to guard Sedona. Everyone knows you got to guard HVO. And we talked about it as who's going to be that one that steps up. And we always assumed to be Madison Connor. And it wasn't that she struggled to start the year, it was just that she didn't really have much opportunities, right? She had a few games during, one game at the NC State game, she had a really good game performance, and you never really saw her string it in back-to-back games. And that's what I even mentioned in the last podcast was, I don't want to see her have a really good game. I want to see her have two straight really good games. Let me see that she's stringing it together, and we finally saw that. She's getting a lot better looks. She's playing with a lot more confidence. I mean, she's her and Sedona are the two biggest pieces from last year. I mean, the fact that she played 60% of a season and a little bit of another season, and she's already at that many points. It's kind of insane considering, where the program has been for a long time. But yeah, Madison Connor, finally, we got to see exactly what we've been asking to see and how great of a player she is and what she means to this team. So it's really, really good and encouraging to see.
Yeah, and to your point about just her scoring ability, when she came from Arizona, she'd scored some, but not a ton. But to get over 60% of her 1,000 points in not even, well, really what's a full season considering she missed a good chunk of games last year, that's really impressive. I think that speaks to her work ethic, her character, and just the shooter she's become. And Mark Campbell's talked about a lot, she's just a pure shooter for them at this point. And she's really worked toward it. So I think it was nice to see her get rewarded for that work as well. And now TCU has at least 3 players who have scored at least 1,000 points, Haley Van Lith, Sedona Prince, and now Madison Connor. TCU followed up the win over Louisiana Tech with a 103-64 win over Samford. Excuse me, Samford. The big note from that game, Sedona did not play. She was sick. She came back and played against UCF later in the week. So Deja Merrill got the start in the Samford game, 13 points, 7 rebounds. I love getting to see what Deja could do. We'd seen little flashes here and there in games where she got a few minutes and things like that. She had a really nice coast-to-coast layup in one of their previous games that was out of hand. So it's like, okay, she can do a few things. And so I really liked getting to see her. She's just a very different style player than Sedona. She's a little bit bigger built. And so she's going to be able to do more back to the basket type of stuff. And I think it's nice just to have that versatility on your roster.
Yeah, and even more so than that, we kind of saw it against South Carolina. You saw it a little bit against NC State. But the ability of being able to grow her as a player more throughout the year, that maybe, when it comes to tournament time or Big 12 tournament even, you throw out a two, center look and see what how teams adjust. If that spreads the floor more, it could be some of that Mark Campbell's kind of keep it in his back pocket. And it's not that she isn't ready yet, it's just that she doesn't have as much game experience as everyone else on this team has. So that's something that you really, really got to adjust to. It's every sport, it's every level. You got to adjust to the speed of everything. So being able to give her time like this and kind of have that confidence level that if Sedona is sick, that yeah, there's going to be a drop off in production. You expect that. It's Sedona is the best center in the country. Like you're not going to find someone that replaces them unless you're a South Carolina team that has sustained years of success in recruiting. But to be able to have a player like Deja come in and do what she did in this game, it gives a lot of confidence that, hey, you know what? If, God forbid, something was to happen to Sedona like it did last year and like everyone else on the team, like at least you know you're in capable hands.
Yeah. And Deja came from Georgia State, where she played 4 years. Kind of your point, it's a different speed coming from Georgia State to the Big 12. So I agree. I think this is going to be really good for TC moving forward that she's gotten this experience and kind of showed a little bit bigger stage and more minutes what she can do. And in that game, Madison Connor, speaking of her, scored 33 points on 8 of 16 shooting from 3-point range. She became TCU's all-time leader, both men and women, in career 30-point games with 5 in 39 games. That's just impressive.
Yeah, one of the things that we talked about before the season, and it's getting closer to reality, is her ability to just kind of be the number one 3-point scorer of all time in TCU history. She's had games like this before. She had them almost every game last season, right? That's just kind of been the biggest difference between this year and last year. And her production is she doesn't have to do it all scoring wise this year. It's not relaxing, I want to say, but it is encouraging to see that, because we talked about after the South Carolina game about how much would that game affect kind of their confidence level going forward. We talked about them having to sit with it for a week, right? And it didn't really affect them at all. They kind of came out and they played a lot better, even against lower quality opponents than they did pre the South Carolina game. So I think that's the biggest thing, especially with Madison Connor, is we talked about her specifically, that she had such a shutdown game and we saw her get so frustrated in that game. We were wondering what it would do to her confidence level, and it did nothing but help it.
Yeah, and talking to the players and Coach Campbell after the Louisiana Tech game, which was that first one back, I just tell they were hungry, they were ready to put South Carolina behind them, but not forget what that felt like. And kind of your point, come out, play even better, play even tougher, and just continue to learn and grow. And I think that's really what we saw this past week, especially as they started conference play with a 92-52 win over UCF in Orlando. So they got a really nice road win to open conference play. Some notes from that game. UCF's leading scorer, Caitlin Peterson, was out with an illness, so she did not play. Their center, Hannah Gusters, was out as well. So their leading scorer was Emily Rodriguez with 17 points. But UCF only shot 34% from the field, so TCU's defense, like it's been doing pretty much all season, really stepped up to the plate. TCU had a 14-point lead after the first quarter. They were up 20 at halftime. TCU shot 53% overall, and we had been talking about this on an earlier podcast, wanting to make sure that shooting percentage doesn't dip down and kind of stays up. And I think it's been trending back up, so it's nice to see. Madison Sedona, Haley Van Lith led the scoring charge. Madison had 20 points at halftime. She was named the Ann Myers Drysdale National Player of the Week for her performances. So I think it's just an all-around really solid performance from TCU to open conference play.
Yeah, and even if anyone wants to be like, oh, well, you know, they're missing two of their top players, it's a little asterisk on them. They get them again in 3 weeks. It's like the 17th or something. They get them rather quickly. So it's a quick turnaround. So TCU could potentially get them at full strength again. But I just think the story of this one is kind of what you're going to see, I think, in every game that isn't Kansas State, Oklahoma State, maybe even Iowa State and West Virginia, depending how they rebound. But you're going to see Sedona just kind of dominate the middle of the court so much that teams have to draw attention to her. There's not many teams in the country that have anyone that can compete with Sedona. So it's going to become death by a thousand cuts, really is, and picking your poison. So you kind of saw that in this game. You saw a lot of TCU spreading the ball around. It's what they're going to do. I think this is just cut, like I said, the most cut and dry you're going to feel like by the end of the season. You watch the UCF game 12 different times throughout the season because you saw the same result.
Yeah. Well, and to your point, a lot of people stepped up. Agnes Umuahmuhu had 9 points and seven rebounds. All of them were offensive rebounds, which is huge. You know, at that point, it doesn't matter who's on the court. If she's getting you seven extra possessions, their best scorer could be on the court, but she's not seeing the ball, so it doesn't matter. I think that was huge for TCU. I think Agnes is really starting to find her rhythm and remaining a key part of the rotation after being out for a little bit. Deja Merrill, we talked about earlier, she had 6 points and a block in 12 minutes. So Sedona didn't even play 30 minutes. I think that's a really good sign, especially like you talked about, if most of the games are going to kind of look like this, I think that's a really good sign to get some more people in there. And yeah, and like you mentioned, they're going to play UCF again on January 14 at home. So they will see UCF probably at full strength then, and it'll look probably a little different. But it's a pick your poison. Double Sedona, make the shooters beat you. And if Madison can keep doing what she's doing and everyone stays on track, it's going to be a really tall task for a lot of teams in this conference.
One other thing to talk about before we move on, a little bit of a preview is Agnes. I know you mentioned a little bit. We talked about it after the South Carolina game about how she was the second best player on the court for TCU that game. And that's kind of who Agnes is, right? Like, she is the most reliable player that you're going to find anywhere on either team, no matter if it's TCU or the one they're playing. And that's kind of what she just does. She wasn't a starter this year. She was happy with that. Because she's still contributing to the team. She's a veteran leader on this team. But when she gets in, you see more than max effort. I mean, she is quite literally throwing her body on the line for this program. So just to see her have the success that she has had so far this season is really, really cool to see.
Yeah, and that kind of play is very infectious too to other players on the team, especially someone's not having a good shooting night, but they see her dive on the floor, they're going to dive on the floor. And so I think that will kind of have some domino effects in games, you know, that are maybe closer and tighter down the line. We're going to look ahead now to the upcoming games for this coming week. All three are going to be at home, and all three are part of the $5 tickets for Holiday Hoops deal. So, if you're wanting to go see this team, you haven't had a chance to, anything like that, $5 tickets, great way to kind of close out the holidays here, enter into the new year. First game up is going to be December 29 at 2 p.m. against Brown, Ivy League team. Not a whole lot to say here. Kind of expect this to look very similar to Louisiana Tech, Samford, and a lot of their games that we've seen so far this year. But after that closes out the non-conference slate, and then TCU will roll back into Big 12 play with Colorado on January 1st at 6:30 p.m. Colorado right now is 10-2 and 1-0 in the Big 12. Their losses are to Boise State and Louisville. Colorado gives up 62 points per game and has the worst turnover margin in the conference, minus 0.17, versus TCU is plus 6 in turnovers. So I think that's something where TCU can really apply their pressure, that full court pressure, like they've been doing all year. They have an opportunity there to feast on some turnovers and get some easy points.
I guess my biggest thing with Colorado is much like my biggest thing with the rest of the conference is I still don't know who's good and who's not. Like Colorado has definitely shown flashes of being able to take a step up in this conference, more so because other teams have started to take a step down already. But I mean, TCU's just kind of going to do what they do, and they're going to play suffocating defense against a team that already struggles to not turn the ball over. You're going to see a lot of that. And Mark Campbell's not afraid to run it from the start of the game. So I think you'll just kind of, I don't know, I'm going to feel like a broken record, but every game's going to feel somewhat different by the end of this.
Well, and to your point about separation within the conference, who's top of the league, who's not, Colorado's conference win is West Virginia, beat them 65-60. West Virginia came into the season as one that everyone expected to be at the top of the conference. They were holding teams to 50 points per game, so they're not a bad team by any stretch. In that win, Colorado shot 54% from field. That's not necessarily sustainable, so that's something if TCU can get them into some rushed looks, that comes down really quick. Freda Foreman had 22 points. Jade Masogayo had 18 points, 7 rebounds, and 2 blocks. An interesting note, she is a Fort Worth native. She went to Fossil Ridge High School. She is one of their leading scorers, 6'3 forward. So that'll be an interesting matchup there for Sedona. Again, big size advantage. That'll be a nice little homecoming for Jade. And then Lior Garzon is their other big scorer. She had 14 points in the conference opener, averages about 13 points per game. So those are kind of the three big names for Colorado. But I think, yeah, I'm with you, JD. It's hard to know right now who exactly is going to be at the top of the conference. But I think if TCU does what they've done all season, apply that full court pressure for 40 minutes, they should be able to pull away at some point in this game.
Yeah, and credit to Colorado, right? Like they've both their losses to Boise State and Louisville, both two pretty good women's basketball teams. So they've played some good, really good teams, but they haven't played at Anna Van Lith or Sedona Prince yet anywhere on their schedule. And you're going to see that with a lot of teams that aren't Kansas State, Iowa State, West Virginia, and like no one really plays that top end talent. Yeah, they've been playing exceptional defense. They've been scoring the ball well, but like you haven't played anyone of this caliber yet. You've played girls close, but you haven't played this caliber yet.
Yeah, and like you're saying, I think that's going to be a common theme for most of the teams in the conference. And it's hard to replicate what TCU has on your scout team. Unless you're Notre Dame, South Carolina, a team like that, you just really can't replicate it on scout team. And so it'll be interesting to see how Colorado adjusts and what they look like coming out of the gate. I do expect it to be close, though, at first, because both teams are going to be fired up. You're still early in conference play. Everything's still in front of you. You have everything to play for. But I do think TCU will ultimately outmatch them.
Yeah, I think not to circle back, but like you're gonna see it a lot is you'll see a lot of close first quarter matchups where teams come out and then TCU's players are used to playing 35 plus minutes right now. Like a lot of these other teams, some of them are keeping their players out there for more than 30 minutes, but not often, just because the talent disparity isn't too much of a drop off from your first to second bench. So it's you're gonna see a kind of a team takeover in the second half.
And so, following the Colorado game, TCU will then take on Cincinnati January 4th, which is Saturday at 7 p.m. Again, that's in Schollmeyer Arena. Right now, Cincinnati is 8-3 overall and 0-1 in the Big 12. Losses to Seton Hall, Florida Gulf Coast, and then their conference opener, they lost to Kansas State. They will play BYU on January 1st before playing TCU, so they will have that second conference game under their belt. This looks to be a defensive matchup just based kind of on the numbers and what TCU and Cincinnati have been doing. Cincinnati hold teams to about 56 points per game. TCU holds teams to just under 53. And Cincy is plus 6.91 in turnover margin, second in the conference behind West Virginia. And they're getting 21 points off of turnovers. TCU's getting 23 points. So very comparable numbers, at least on the defensive end, for Cincinnati and TCU.
Yeah, the thing with Cincinnati is they are a very slow drip feed basketball offensive system, at least. And TCU is so used to very fast paced opponents that it'll be interesting to see kind of how they adjust. I think a slower paced team plays more into, their hand of not allowing teams to be able to establish what they want to do in separation on the court, just because the basketball IQ on TCU side is so exceptionally high. But it will be kind of their first time going against it. So it'll be interesting to see how they react and come out for it.
And I think games like that, where you have a team that really slows it down and tries to do it at a pace that you're not used to, can in some ways be a bit of a trap game because that's not where you're used to. And to get in your rhythm, you got to go at this high flying pace and get turnovers and make back-to-back threes and all these things to build momentum. And if they're trying to slow you down, you never get that little streak to get you going. You could be looking up and it's a 7-point game with 3 minutes left. So to your point, it's going to be interesting to see how there's a veteran team, even though they've only been playing together for 13 games, 14 games at this point. How will they react to a team that goes with a very different approach? I think they have the IQ to overcome that and the players and the talent. But I don't think this is just, oh, from the jump get-go, it's just going to be just blow them out of the water type of thing. Now on offense, Cincinnati is at the bottom of the conference, number 14 with 68 points in scoring. So kind of your point, JD, they're not going to be quick paced. They're going to slow the ball down. They're going to do what they can to make it their own pace. In that conference opening loss to number 13, Kansas State, it was 76-59. And Cincinnati was down 12 at halftime. They shot 31% from the field and 57% from the free throw line. They were 11 of 19. So it's not that they didn't get there, they just couldn't make their free throws. So I think if that could be something to watch in the TCU game is if Cincinnati is getting in the free throw line, are they making their free throws? Because sometimes in these games where it's 17, 15 points, if you're not making your free throws, all of a sudden, what could be a tight game turns into a blowout.
Yeah, I mean, Kansas State shooting 50% from the field, especially 52% from the three, does stand out to me because they aren't a very big 3-point shooting team. So them being able to find that much success beyond the arc does give me a lot of confidence for the game, even though that Cincinnati will try to slow it down and they do turn teams over a lot. So I still am very confident TCU will win this by at least 15 points. So I think, might be a tighter halftime score than what people would think it would be.
And some key players to look at for Cincinnati. Jillian Hayes is a 6'1 forward. She averages about 16 points per game and almost 10 rebounds. Taniya Hilton, 13.5 points, 3.6 assists per game. And then Elias Nadiba, she's a 6'3 forward, doesn't score a lot, but she's their rebounder. She averages 7 rebounds a game and a block per game. So she's going to be someone I think comes in, give some good minutes, and we'll try and challenge Sedona a little bit. As we're chatting about all this conference play, one thing to note going into conference, this is a very, very motivated TCU team, especially because you have Madison and Sedona who missed a huge chunk of conference play last year. And this team wants to host a tournament game. They know exactly what's on the line. The expectations internally are really, really high. And so I think you're going to see a team that wants to show, like we talked about earlier, what they learned from South Carolina, that they are here, that South Carolina was a blip on the radar, and they're ready to win. So I think just, watching this team with that in mind, I think you are going to see the little chip on their shoulder and things like that, even though they have a ton of talent. They're still going to play like they've gotten, nothing to lose and everything in front of them.
Yeah, it's like we talked about, right? It's just, how does this team respond to adversity? You hadn't seen it yet, and then you're seeing this team fired up. It's kind of, I don't want to say we've talked about it before because I don't want it to sound like we're gloating, but like the Big 12 isn't going to offer you the same talent level that you played in North Carolina State, Notre Dame, South Carolina. Like Kansas State's maybe your closest you're going to get to that. And you can't even take rankings as a true denominator of how great a team is in women's basketball, right? Like we've talked about, there's 12 top teams. Then after that, the fall off is rather significant. So you to be able to play teams like that and then go into your conference play, it iron sharpens iron. And now you're playing in a field of daisies. So it's kind of interesting to see how long they can keep this up before hitting a wall in conference play. Because it'll happen,
Oh,
right?
yeah.
I fully expect them to hit a wall. And if you don't, then hey, maybe it's a sign of really good things to come. So, it's inevitable. Even South Carolina has a loss this year. Like, it's gonna happen. So, but for now, like, it's really, really good to see them kind of reap the success of what they had from the pre-conference play.
Well, and kind of to your point there, Kansas State is the only other ranked team from the Big 12. You have Utah, Oklahoma State, and Baylor receiving a few votes. They're kind of just, each one's receiving just a couple. That could, like you said, though, easily change in a heartbeat as to who is receiving votes, who's not, who's ranked. So it can be kind of volatile. But it is nice to see that TCU does have some teams on their schedule coming up that will give them a challenge and are kind of trying to hit into that top 25. I wanted to take a quick look at the Big 12 standings, just kind of overall. We've chatted a lot about some of these teams, but Kansas State sitting at 13-1, followed by TCU at 12-1. You have Oklahoma State 11-1, and then Texas Tech 12 wins, Baylor with 11 wins. And then a whole host of teams with 10 wins, a couple with nine, and then your bottom feeders are Arizona State and Houston at 5-7 and 4-8. So at least you've got a lot of teams with a lot of non-con wins, teams that know how to win, and should be able to at least, put some fight up no matter what's happening. But I haven't seen anything too crazy yet with the Big 12 standings. I think right for the moment, things are about kind of how we expected with K-State, TCU, and Oklahoma State near the top.
Yeah, I think you're kind of going to see that two horse show all the way through the season. And then Oklahoma State might genuinely be a surprise team that kind of shows up a little bit. But I mean, a reminder, TCU only gets Kansas State one time. So that could very much be a difference maker and tiebreaker.
And that game
And
is on the road in Manhattan.
yeah. So it's just something to keep in mind, right? Like if both these teams are keeping up their pace, so you're only going to get one chance, and that's enough to be a tiebreaker for seeding in the Big 12 tournament.
And a cool note on Oklahoma State, they beat Iowa State in their conference opener the other day. What was really neat was it was the first game for their coach since she became a mom. So it's just kind of a fun little story. I saw that a video floating around on social media of her post-game press conference with her, she was holding her new child, and it's just really kind of a fun story, sweet thing to watch if you kind of like those feel-good stories. Just a few other little Big 12 notes for TCU players. Sedona is still a conference leader in blocks with 46. She's leading the nation at 3.9 blocks per game. Like you mentioned earlier, JD, there's just very few, if any, centers in the country that can really touch what she can do. I think South Carolina is where we saw there are players who can touch what she does, but it's very few and far between right now. She also is shooting 63% from the field. Madison Connor tops the NCAA with four made threes per game and has 53 total makes this year on 44.5% shooting. That is really good numbers.
She already has over half of the three-pointers she made last season. She had 100 last season. She's already at 53, so she might break her own record.
I wouldn't be surprised, especially if they can win some games, Big 12 tournament, get to the NCAA tournament. She'll have a few more games to do as well, especially if she doesn't get injured. I think she's got that record. Haley Van Lith, she's number two in the conference in assist to turnover ratio at 3.2, and number three in assists per game at 6.5. And then Van Lith and Sedona are the number three and number five scorers in the Big 12. And like we've kind of been talking about all year, that's really hard to stop if you have two of the top five scorers in the conference. So that means they're two of the top scorers in the country. It's just hard to stop something like that.
Yeah, and then you have, Madison Connor, who's the top in NCAA in three-pointers. Like, doesn't even look at conference standings for scoring. Like, it's a deadly combo. So, you're not going to find a team better set up to compete at the highest level in the Big 12 than TCU. Like, I know Kansas State has a lot of veteran experience. They've got really great players themselves, but I don't think they're in a better position than TCU to be able to compete at the highest level.
Yeah. No, and just looking ahead, I'm kind of going to talk about, we're still very optimistic about the team, really excited about what this team can do. And now that we're hitting Big 12 play, like I said, I got one more non-conference game with Brown, and then you go right into the meat of your conference play. This is where it gets really fun, really exciting. You start to see the conference race emerge. You start to have those initial little too early conversations about NCAA tournament, who can host, all these types of things. I think this is where it really starts to get exciting, and you really start to see what some of these teams can do.
Absolutely. I mean, you're in the meat and the potatoes of the season now. So, whatever happened in prior to the UCF game does not matter anymore, right? That's a wash that prepared you for the rest of the season. Your conference play is what sets you up for success now.
So, as a reminder, the first game back is December 29 against Brown, and then January 1 against Colorado. They roll back in the conference play. You have anything else that you want to talk about, JD, before we sign off?
No, other than the fact that if you haven't been to a game yet this season, please get out to one. There's a chance that this is the best basketball team you're going to see, men's or women's. So, you're going to find cheaper tickets. You're going to get better seats. You might as well go out there and watch a game before you can't get a seat when it comes to tournament time.
Well, thank you everyone so much for joining us. For JD Andrews, I'm Tori Couch. Thank you for listening to Splash Pad, a TCU on SI podcast. Until next time, have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, everyone.